It's getting into that mindset to do something really hard. Being coachable is very important. Now, what does this have to do with fitness? Everything. If I didn't have that mental image of myself, you're strong. Look what you overcame. I just understand what a journey takes. And sometimes it takes doing really hard things to get what you want. A coaching relationship is a relationship. If you don't trust and respect your coach, and if you don't trust and respect your client, you're not going to get anywhere.
Welcome to the Thought Leader Revolution with Nikki Ballou. Join the revolution. There's never been a better time in history to speak your truth, find your freedom, and make your fortune. Each week, we interview the world's top thought leaders and learn the secrets of how they built a 6 to 7 figure practice. This episode has been brought to you by eCircleAcademy.com, the proven system to add 6 to 7 figures a year to your thought leader practice.
Welcome to another exciting episode of the podcast, The Thought Leader Revolution. I'm your host, Nikki Ballou. And boy, do we have an exciting guest lined up for you today. Today's guest is another one of the incredible rock star team of my GOAT mentor, Amber the Hammer Camera. She is the person who helps make their most powerful and fastest growing company soar. I am speaking, of course, of none other than the one, the only, the legendary Deborah Bash. Welcome to the show, Deborah.
Well, thank you. Wow, that is the best intro I have ever gotten in my life.
I'm glad to hear that. That makes me feel good.
So, I wish that I had known you when I was a prof. I would have had you go in and stare down hundreds of 20-year-olds and tell them that, because when you, there's nothing scarier than looking at hundreds of 20-year-olds when you're in your 40s and 50s. You're like, oh God, please don't let me screw up. Please don't let me forget a word.
That's awesome, Deborah. I love it. That's awesome. So listen, welcome. Really great to have you here.
As you know,
I'm a massive fan of Amber's. My collaboration with him has resulted in me dropping 58 pounds initially. And then after that, I decided, you know what? I want to like have my body look symmetrical because my legs were bigger than my upper body. And we have gone on a new journey together to do a competition. And to do that, I've had to gain weight. So I've kind of gained like 18, 19 of that back so far. And I've been told that there's going to be a period where I'm going to be eating a lot less because, man, he tripled my food. So there are days when I'm just like, oh, my God, I have to eat more. I can't believe I got to eat more.
How do you feel about gaining the weight? Like when you see that you're gaining the weight, are you happy? Like are you like, yes, this is working? Or do you have that little voice in the back of your head going, Nikki, you're going to get fat again or like whatever?
I don't have a voice that goes, you're going to get fat again. But it, as you know, gaining weight isn't all muscle. Like, unfortunately, there's a little bit, like my conditioning isn't what it was when I was down 58. So,
right.
But I also trust Amber and I trust the process. I understand that this is going to happen. So, you know, my waist is a little bigger. I got a little bit of a roll around my belly, but nothing like it was before. And I'm clear that, and, you know, we've talked about this, that, you know, by competition time, I want my waist to be smaller than it was when I was, you know, 169 pounds. I want it to be like at 29, 30 inches, fully tight. And then I want to keep it that way. Like this competition for me isn't, hey, I'm going to become a competitive bodybuilder going forward because that's not my goal. But what I want to do is get myself into the best possible shape and then maintain it going forward.
And if you do everything he says, you will, because that was my journey to meet Amber. I had the same issue. My lower half was bigger than my upper half. And so I started with Amber 5 years ago. I was 53, 54.
Wow.
And I won my first show with him. And I've been with him ever since. And I've competed nationally. I've competed internationally. But I'm not quite there yet. So I'm not giving up. And next year I'm going to be 60 and I just trust him. And I'm like, we're doing this. We are doing this.
Love it. Love it. Love it. So that's a good segue into my first question, which is, you know, tell us your backstory. How'd you get to be the great Deborah Bash?
Okay. Well, thank you. You know, I've thought about this a lot, and not how did I get to be me, but how does a person go from being a fitness professional, a college professor, working on the gym floor as a trainer, to being a competitor? And it's not, we're not talking about my competitions at all right now. It's getting into that mindset to do something really hard. Yeah. And it takes grit. It takes the ability to be coached, because being coachable is very important. And it's something that I connected to how I survived my horrific start in life, which is going back to my childhood. From the outside, I was a very outgoing, gregarious kid. I did really well in school. I was a super athlete to the point where my parents had to make a decision. Does she do competitive figure skating or competitive gymnastics? They chose gymnastics, and I just took off. What people saw on the outside was in no way of what was going on in my home life. My mother had me at 16. Unfortunately for her, she was a very naive, young 15-year-old and got pregnant with me. My father is, you know, considerably older than her, like 6.5 years, 7 years older, knew better than, but you'll see that this was a pattern. And she became very reliant on things like Valium to get through her day. I was about 5 years old when she had her first major, what they used to call nervous breakdown. And that started 7 years of full-on hospitalizations, where my mother was in, you know, basically areas of the hospital that they consider lockdown. When we would go visit, we had to go through many, many locked doors. My father was the chief person to take care of myself and my brother. He is, by all accounts, and I have proof of this, a mental abuser, a physical abuser, an emotional abuser, and a sexual abuser. I was subjected to all of it, whereas my younger brother was subjected to the mental and emotional. I was sexually abused by my father, almost daily from the time I was 7 until I was about 12, 13, when my mother was released from the hospital full time. He told me that if I ever told her or anyone, my mother would end up back in the hospital and people would see me as a very dirty, disgusting girl because I let it happen. I know that I used to fight back. I am very aware because it's my personality. However, sometimes when you're a child, you have to make a decision. If I just do what my parent wants, then I can go to sleep and get up and go do what I love, which is gymnastics, which is school. These were my outlets. So if I could be the best in school and the best in gymnastics, then I wasn't this sad, disgusting, full of shame little girl at home. And that's what I was. And the funny thing, this is like, I'm not laughing, but it's just so ironic. Teachers at school would ask me to take the less fortunate children under my wing, the kids that didn't have money. We had money. My father was an executive with Johnson & Johnson baby products. He's educated. He taught university accounting. So we're not talking that I lived in a shack somewhere. I was better than middle class. We had pool in the backyard, property, lived in Caledon. I had private gymnastics lessons. When I told my mother she was not mentally capable of leaving this man. Financially, she had nothing. She ended high school at 16. So she did the next best thing, which a lot of people have judged her for, and I unfortunately judged her as well when I became a mother, is she put a lock on my door. Because he was so physically abusive to both her and I, he would still demand to drive me to gymnastics. Well, guess what? You can be abused in a car. So I'm painting the story that my life was horrific. And I was the scapegoat kid. It was, if Deborah's happy and nice to him, then he's happy. If Deborah decides to get some of her attitude and sets him off, then the whole family really, really suffers. And we went to counseling, and I told the psychiatrist what he had done to me. And I was very honest. I was so honest. I told so many people, and nobody came forth. Why? It was the 70s. I turned 14 in 1979. There were no laws. But the good thing is, in Ontario, there is no statute of limitations. So into my late 30s, after having lots of therapy and raising two kids on my own, yes, I got married young, I had my kids young, I got divorced, big surprise. I was in no position to be a good, healthy partner. I had my father arrested. And that led to a 4.5 year court case in which he was sentenced. At the time, it was unprecedented to 10.5 years. He was found guilty on all accounts. There were many counts, except for one count of something that I don't even want to talk about it. But the judge said, it's not that I don't believe you, Ms. Bash. It's that you used adult language to describe an act that a child wouldn't know that word. And she said, by no means do I want to make this a case that an appeal lawyer can take it and run with it. So if I discharge this charge, then they've got nothing to stand on. And I was grateful for that. This was a woman that was looking into the future saying, you know, he is on the registered sexual offenders act page, whatever it's called. He's considered a dangerous person. He's a convicted pedophile. And I have gone to every victim impact hearing and given my statement to keep him in jail. He was released a few times, reoffended, shot back in. So much so that last January, I did it again and said to them, let's not make this about me and my horror. Let's make this about somebody else's child. Let's make this about the children that are trafficked with child pornography. This man, you found him with 30,000 images on his computer, and you're going to let him out into the world again. And the parole board said, you know, I made a compelling story, a compelling case. I'm very believable. I am beyond respectful in the way I deliver it. So they're going to keep him in an extra 6 months, but they will be releasing him in May. So he was released in May 2023. Offside, I don't have a relationship with my brother because my brother made a choice to try and support our father. He believes me. He thinks it's sad what happened to me, but he wants a dad. It's very sad to me that my brother has a victim mindset at 54 and wants a relationship, being the father of a girl and a boy that are grown now, knowing that he could never leave his daughter in the room with him. He used to tell me that. My kids have never met my father, and that's the way it should be. So he took him into his life, his home. And I said, well, you can't have both of us. December 28th, this 2023, two police officers show up at my home to let me know that there's been a warrant, a Canada-wide warrant, because they can't find my father. He's reoffended and he's going back to jail. So where I sit right now is I am about to write my 9th or 10th victim. And I hate the word. I want to call it my survivor impact statement to keep him there. Now, what does this have to do with fitness? Everything. Because if I didn't have fitness, if I didn't have that mental image of myself, you're strong. Look what you overcame. I forced myself to have natural childbirth, which I wouldn't do today because I was like, that pain, you've been through worse. You don't want the drugs. Go through it. That mindset. Now, there could be people rolling their eyes going, oh, this woman is sick. Like she likes pain. No, I don't like pain. I just understand what a journey takes. And sometimes it takes doing really hard things to get what you want. I feel that I've been blessed with grit. I feel that I've been blessed with a good brain to discern between who's a good person in this world and who isn't. And I had no qualms whatsoever to going up to people that I saw as leaders, as number ones, and going, I want to be just like you. So I'm going to do everything you do so that I can glean from you the good stuff. I did that with my mother-in-law. I loved that she was a stay-at-home mom and baked, and nothing was too hard for her to do. I've done that with professors that taught me. I've done that with gymnastics coaches. I did that with Ammer. Ammer has fired me, yelled at me, called me like, are you dumb? Like, what's wrong with you? Because don't cry, Deborah. Do not cry. Do not show emotion right now. That doesn't mean Ammer's bad. It's because Ammer saw in me potential even beyond what other people have seen. So I am forever grateful to him, because it's because of him that I can hear feedback now and not go backwards to that little girl, you know, who was always looking for validation, always looking like, look at me, I can be good. You know, you got to see the good in me. Ammer's the reason why I can step on a stage at 58, like last year, in a sparkly bikini thong up my ass, knowing that I don't look like any of his pros and have confidence. I have confidence up to the eyeballs because Ammer's taught me, like, that's what you have to do. If you want this, then you have to do this. And he's never steered me wrong. So that's what I bring to the table with the people that I work with. I'm not warm and fuzzy until I have to be. I would say the warm and fuzziest I am is with my children. My daughters did more for me than any $200 an hour therapy session, because I got to see what young women are like when given safe environments to run around without their clothes on, or just be free, or just say whatever that was on their minds, or challenge me and not be afraid that they were going to get hurt for it. So I took great delight in raising my girls, and I took a lot from them and tell them, thank you for choosing me, because you gave me so much. You gave me the capacity to love and to show love. And with my clients, I don't show love in an enabling way, like, oh, it's okay. It's all right that you cheated on your diet. I'm more, okay, so you cheated. Let's figure out why. You know, and it takes a certain person to hear Deborah bash feedback and not hear, who does this bitch think she is? Like, why is she talking down to me? If I was perfect, I wouldn't need her. And I've very honest, I've come across that. So I've had to learn to evolve in the way that what worked for me, tough love, it does not work with everyone. So I can't be that tough love person all the time.
I got to be honest, I had no idea you were going to share anything remotely resembling this. Listen, like I said, we were looking for truth, and I'm glad you did. I'm a father to two sons, an 18-year-old boy, and my other son's about to turn 16. I'm not with their mom anymore. Tried like hell to keep our family together, but she wasn't interested. But I can tell you this, that as a father, number one job of a father is to protect his family. And you provide for them and protect for them. And then, you know, preside, to lead. And I can't imagine a man who wouldn't do that, who would, instead of being his daughter's protector, would be her abuser. Mm-hmm. Bless her. I can't even wrap my head around that. And I saw this movie last year with, I took my sons to see it, about human trafficking. Jim Caviezel,
I saw it.
Played the lead character, Tim Ballard. And I wanted my sons to see it because I wanted them to see that there's evil in the world and that it's our job to recognize it and stand up for it. You know, congratulations on taking a really crappy experience and turning it into victory for yourself. But, you know, if I were there, I'd give you a hug right now. You know what I mean?
Thank you.
And tell you, hey, shitty this happened to you. And I can get that that would make it very difficult to be a wife. It'd be hard for you to trust a man. Almost impossible, quite frankly, to trust any man if the man you're supposed to trust the most betrayed that trust repeatedly. You know, it's...
The nice thing about my ex-husband and I is that, you know, he had a lot of growing to do too. I don't judge him anymore for the choices he made and what he did, because he was a crappy husband in that he didn't fully understand what he was dealing with me. And that's not, he didn't try. We tried to go to counseling. He didn't want any part of it. He just wanted to be free, move to California, have his life. But he always made sure that the girls and I were financially okay. And he's always been...
Well, that's his number one job, right? So he did it.
Right. And he's been a protector. And the beauty of that is we have forged a very nice friendship. And we walked our baby down the aisle when she got married. She got married at the age of 27. She turned 28 a few months later. And she was 4 years old when he left. So she said to me, my dream is to just be with my mom and my dad one more time, just the three of us. And before we walked her down the aisle, I just looked at him and I said, hey, Michael, we did it. We made it. Not a lot of couples split up and don't rip each other apart. Like we really put the girls first. I am so proud of that with you and I. Yeah. And he was like, don't say those things. Don't make me cry before I walk her down the aisle. So it's very nice. Like I do trust men. I do know good men. I love men. That's why I can trust Amber. Because I know, I actually physically get little hairs on the back of my neck stand up. And there are things that I listen for. And I think, why are you asking that question? That's a weird question. And I would not let my children go to homes where there was a partner that exhibited behavior that I felt was suspect. Maybe I overreacted. Don't care. My job was to protect my girls. I have a partner. We saw that movie together. He was my high school crush. We reunited 7 years ago. And I always, the first thing I wanted to know was, did you know what was happening to me when I was in high school and school? Because we knew each other from public school. He goes, no. I go, really? You didn't know? You didn't know anything. I had this vision inside of me that everybody knew, and that's why they hated me. Everybody hated me, Nikki. Everyone hated me. Nobody wanted to be my friend. Nobody talked to me in the halls. You know why? I figured out in therapy. I gave off this, don't come near me. Like, I'm not going to talk to you. It was protection. So people were afraid to approach me. They would hear on the news, like on the morning announcements, if you happen to see Deborah in the hall, like I have my maiden name is not Bash. Congratulate her. She went to the Ontarios this week. This past weekend, she won all round. People were afraid to approach me. And I had a chip on my shoulder. I was not friendly. I expected everybody to know and see the shame and judge me. So why would he know? Everybody was afraid of me. And I realized that. I went, wow, I have a resting bitch face. I have an energy that comes off as, do not cross this line. But it protected me.
I don't know your ex-husband. I've never met him. You've told me 3 minutes of information about him. But the things you've told me that says he's a good man are, one is, he made sure he looked after you and your girls. And he never shirked that responsibility. That's a fucking never. Man. Excuse my French.
No, man. He is.
That's a man. He knew his responsibility and he did not give up on it. And, you know, for whatever it's worth, he had no idea what he was dealing with when he got married to you. And he couldn't deal with it. He didn't know how to deal with it. And I hope you can forgive him that. Because
I have. And he's forgiven me.
Yeah. And there's nothing to forgive on his end with you. I mean, you were going through your hell. It's just, it's incredible that despite all that, you know, you both saw something in each other that you fell in love with and you made beautiful children out of this. Because one of the people I admire the most in the world is a man named Tucker Carlson. And he's an American philosopher and commentator. And someone asked him, what's the number one piece of advice you would give me in order to live a successful life? A young person, right? And he said, have children. That is the biggest source of wealth you're ever going to have. And the moment I heard that, I knew instantly the truth of what he was saying. Instantly. And you understood that at some level, which is why I think you got married and had daughters. You knew that was going to be your wealth, your salvation. And, you know, for whatever it's worth, like I said, I don't know your ex-husband, nothing, but everything you said to me says you picked a good man. You did your job. You picked a good father for your daughters. And I don't know if you need to hear this or not, but I feel moved to tell you this.
Thank you.
That you picked a good man. You did your job. Despite the shitty example of your father, you picked a good father for your girls. And you should be proud of that.
I am, because I don't know if you're aware of the statistics of when women have been sexually abused, and especially with incest, it gets into your DNA. You are wired differently. I am not the woman I was supposed to be right now. I don't know who I was supposed to be, because I was so altered as a child that it alters everything, how you view the world, your choices in life. And this is where I say I was blessed with some type of grit that said, I do not want to be anything like my family. I do not want to identify as that, even though it has come up in my life. And yes, I've been a victim in my mindset more times than I care to admit. But I saw this young man who, for some reason, was working his ass off to try to get my attention at a party. And I thought, okay, he sees something. When I met his family, I was like, I need this. I need this in my life. I need stability. I need the love. I need the boringness of it. I don't want chaos anymore. I don't want drama. I don't want to talk about bullshit at dinner, like keeping safe and what you're getting punched out. Like, I loved that my mother-in-law was like, Leave It to Beaver housewife, Barbara Billingsley. Like, she just,
those are great, man. Those are great women.
I know. And I loved her for that.
World needs more of them, quite frankly. Quite frankly.
And I wanted to have kids and I wanted to stay home and I was allowed to. And I was grateful for that. So you're right. I'm proud of myself because I chose well for my girls. And they have chosen phenomenal men. Like I love my son-in-laws. Just adore them.
That's awesome. That's awesome. I'm happy for you.
Yeah.
You know, I have a podcast that I do for men. I brought you on my business show, but
oh, okay.
There's a part of me that is thinking I might take bits of this and put it in that podcast too, because I think men need to hear this type of message. They need to hear about a woman's experience who's gone through hell, and they need to hear about the importance of seeing a woman's pain and knowing how to be a good man in the face of it. It's difficult. It's difficult.
Well, I think too, a lot of men want to try and fix things in these situations, and they know inherently, I can't fix this. What the hell do I do? Like, my partner wants to go and just kill my father. Like, he goes, I could easily kill him. I go, don't worry, I could too. He's in his 80s. Like, it's no problem. But it's because my partner was a single dad and raised two boys as well. And he's a grand, he comes from three boys. He raised two boys. He only has nephews. And now he has three granddaughters.
Well, he sounds
and like, loves he, the he girls.
A lot like me. I'm 56. You're what, 58?
59 now.
59. My lady's 59. Teresa, have you met her? She comes to the
gym. I have. I met her yesterday. I introduced myself.
She comes to the gym and trains with Lindsay.
Yes. I saw them training yesterday.
Yeah. She's great. Teresa's awesome. And so I come from three boys. There's three of us. I'm the eldest. I've got two sons. I've got, in addition to that, I have three nephews and two nieces. It's something. Deborah, you and I should break bread together. I'd enjoy that. Yeah. I'd enjoy that. I'd like to chat with you some more. There's things for me to learn from you.
Okay. Anytime, I would love it.
I'm going to make it happen. I'm just letting you know. I'm not one of these people that says we should do it and then we'll forget about it. I will reach out to you and make it happen. But
okay.
This has been a mind-blowing and wonderful podcast. But if you don't mind, let's have you answer my last question. Then I want to pivot in a different, more business and fitness-like direction.
Good, yes. But you know something? It's good because now everybody has that platform. When they hear what I'm saying, they'll go, okay, because this is what helped her get to where she needed to be.
From victim to victor, baby. That's it.
Right.
Yeah, it's good. All right, you were going to answer one of my questions.
Oh, at the beginning, you just said, how did you help with growing Hammer Fitness, Lady the F Up, Man the F Up? And yeah, it's because Amber and I work very well together. There's a good trust there. There has to be a lot of trust. If he asks me to do something, I fulfill it quickly. If he says something that I think, I don't know if that's the right way to go in a certain situation, I can question him in a way that he hears it, like, maybe she doesn't understand what I'm saying. Maybe she is worried what the ramifications of that decision are. And I'm really grateful that he sees the maturity in me and the ability to do things. And with his vision and me being sort of his right-hand soldier carrying out what he needs done with the team of all the coaches. You know, you've got a large team of 13 people. You have different egos, different levels of ego, different backgrounds, different parenting. They were all parented differently, different views on things, different backgrounds of, you know, socioeconomics. So he trusts and has faith in me that I'm going to navigate all those different things with the staff and help them feel that they are listened to and supported. And as a result of him setting the bar high in his vision, yes, and me going, come on, guys, this is what's got to be done. And I carry it out. And I have no problem being very direct or being very supportive. I've had coaches cry and I've had coaches say, thank you, I needed that kick in the ass. That everybody keeps leveling up. So Amr knows my backstory and he knows what I've gone through and what I've accomplished. So he knows that I'll do anything. I'll fight anybody for him. If somebody says something rude on social media, I have to like not want to go after that person, but I realize that that's just stupidity. You know, like, don't talk to Amber that way. Don't talk to my team that way. I'm the mama bear.
I see that. I like that about you. It's a beautiful thing. You know, my Teresa, she works with me as well, and she's not the mama bear like you, where she's direct and go hammering people, but she'll pull me aside and she'll say that this person's not good for us. Get rid of them. And it took me a while to learn to listen to her, but if she has a bad vibe about somebody, they're out.
No, my way does not work for everybody. And nor do I think I've got it all figured out. I still have to keep evolving. I have to actually learn to tap into my feminine power because my masculine energy is very strong.
Your feminine energy is very strong as well.
Don't
kid yourself.
Okay, good.
I'm a very masculine alpha man. And I teach men about this and I study this. And I study women, okay?
Yeah.
And I'm telling you, you got a lot of feminine in you. You've been a mom, you've raised two daughters, you've been protective. That's all feminine power.
Yes.
The masculine is the get shit done part of you.
Yeah.
If you have a partner in your life and he's a good man and he looks after you, you'll have plenty of expressions of feminine power with him. Your femininity will come out in your relationship as well. But I can feel it from you in this conversation.
Oh, good. Because I don't, you know, when people say, oh, Deborah, you've got balls. I'm like, yeah, I do. But I don't want to lose them. I just want to sometimes put them in a golden cage and put them on a shelf until I need them again, you know?
The way that you run the team for Amr is very it's on a feminine power basis. The way you speak, you've got a lot of feminine energy in you as well. The fact that you're interested in looking good and pretty and beautiful by being on a body, that's all feminine. Look, I'm just telling you, I coach people on these issues, right?
Yeah.
Especially the men. I can spot the energy of a woman. You're more feminine than masculine. Don't worry about it.
Okay, good. That's good.
Yeah. And the masculine parts that you have, they're not overpowering your feminine. And you need them in your line of work. You need them. So I wouldn't get rid of them. Like I wouldn't even remotely consider getting rid of them. Just
no.
You know. Smile when you genuinely are happy. And I think you do. And you strike me as someone who does, and show people and tell them what's great about them. Cause that's the beautiful power of the feminine. The feminine is able to uplift more than the masculine. As the masculine kicks ass, the feminine is the part that uplifts and energizes people and lets them know how they're cared for and loved and all that good stuff.
Yeah, you're right. You know, my team is very nice to me. They always go, how old are you again? They go, you don't seem that old. And I said, it's because I have such joy working with young people. I learn from you and I am not afraid to say, I don't know how to do this in technology. I don't know what that means. Help me here. And I'm always saying, Magda, I need help with you. Yeah. Megan, can you help me with this reel?
Videos, man. Like, I'm like, how do you do those videos by yourself? Because my videos don't look nearly as good as hers.
She magical Magda, because she gets those that, and I'm, she's like, oh, sure, I can help you. You do. I go, but go slowly. Because she'll go, I go, no, slowly. So I can.
There you go. All right. Yeah, I should tell you what, eventually I think I'll be interviewing all of you guys. So I should interview her too at some point. So, so Deborah, this has been a great interview, and I'm going to have you back. We'll talk about other topics.
Okay.
In the interest of, you know, time and getting things done for you and for me and all that, I think we should move into the next phase of the interview, which is, if there's folks that are listening to this and they're interested in finding out about you specifically and Lady the F Up and the other wonderful programs that you and Amor and company offer, what is the best way for them to connect with you?
They can DM me on Instagram at coach_Deborah_Bash.
Okay.
They can reach out to our main page of Lady the F Up. Or, you know, even if they went on to Hammer Fitness website and said, I heard one of your coaches, Deborah Bash, talking. I would like to know more about a program. It will find its way either to me or to the right person. Many times people will make inquiries and Rima or Amor will think, you know what, based on my knowing our staff and knowing what this person wants, we think you'd be better with this coach. And that's the beauty of working with a team of really great professionals. Nobody gets their nose out of joint. No one's like, but that's my referral. No, it's a referral to the company, and it always comes back, and we need to grow, you know, because let's face it, a coaching relationship is a relationship. It is. And if you don't trust and respect your coach, and if you don't trust and respect your client, there's going to be a lot of hell to pay because you're not going to get anywhere.
Amen, sister. Amen. No, that's true. I'm going to make sure all this is in the show notes and that people can easily find you. I'm just going to say this. I'm going to speak to my listener. If you're a woman and you've got a past in which some things have happened that have been traumatic, maybe they're as traumatic as what Deborah's gone through, maybe they're not, but for you, they were impactful. And if you're wondering to yourself, at some level, I carry this with me still, and I'd like not to carry it with me anymore, I strongly urge you to reach out to Deborah and the folks at Hammer Fitness and have a conversation with them about your fitness. Because when you strengthen yourself physically, you automatically strengthen yourself mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. And I'm not saying it's going to take the place of, you know, other types of therapy or coaching that more directly address those. I'm not saying it takes the place of that, but I am saying it will help, and it will help dramatically. And I want to just encourage you to reach out to these folks. And Deborah, we end off every episode by asking you, as our guest expert, what are your top three, what I call expert action steps? These are your three best pieces of advice that you have for my listener to help him or her take their life, their business, their fitness to the next level, but in bullet point form. What say you? Yep.
Okay. So my first one is, whatever you're doing that's in the right direction, be consistent. Consistency trumps intensity.
Oh, that's good. I've never heard that before.
Well, you don't want to go do a 3-hour workout and then not work out again for another 10 days. I'd rather you do a 15-minute workout every other day or every day than, you know, so consistency over intensity. The second one is focus on progress. Whatever that progress is, don't look at why am I not at the end? Look at what, where you've come from and be honest. Not sleeping, but now you're sleeping. Weren't drinking water, now you're drinking water. Don't put faith and effort into one metric. Progress can be measured in multitude of ways. And that means going to number three, be honest. Be honest. Don't, if you can't be honest to yourself, you will never, ever go to where you want to be. If you can't be honest to your coach, fine, whatever, you're wasting your money. But if you can't be honest to yourself, you're not going to achieve those goals. So if you cheat on your diet, if you give up working out, if you just want to lay down and watch Netflix or whatever it is you do, then be honest. But don't expect to have the goal happen when you're not doing what you need to do.
Yeah, okay. These are three excellent expert action steps. And I just want to say this, Deborah. The first one where you said consistency trumps intensity, I'm going to ask you to do something for me with that one, okay? And it's going to help you too, but I want you to do this here. I want you to go on your Canva or something, and I want you to write that out, consistency trumps intensity, with some really cool graphics and put your name, like it's a Deborah Bash quote, because no one said this before that I've ever heard. And I listen for good quotes. And I want you to post that all over your social media. And then I want you to go and do a video on it. Consistency trumps intensity. Can you do that?
I could do that.
I love it. I love it. That's so good. That's so good. Damn.
Thank you.
Like, if that's all I got from our conversation today, that was worth $1,000.
Yeah, for me too.
That was $1,000 right there. Like, that was really, really, really good. Listener, Deborah Bash is a woman who has raised herself from victim to victor, and she's somebody that you can learn a lot from. I recommend that you listen to this episode a couple of times, you take some notes, and let the raw honesty of her story wash over you, because it'll make you glad to be alive and it'll make you glad that human beings like her exist. So make sure that you do that. Deborah Bash, I just want to say that I'm just getting to know you through Amor, and God bless you. You are
thank you.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I really appreciate being invited on your podcast. I really, really appreciate that.
You did a spectacular job. This was one of my favorite conversations that I've ever had. I just want you to understand, I have done over 550 episodes of this podcast. I've done over 130 episodes of my other podcast. So I'm approaching 700 episodes where I've been the host. On top of that, I've been a guest on over 600 podcasts. So when I tell you this is one of my favorite conversations, you're in rare and select company.
Thank you. That means a lot. Thank you.
You bet. Absolutely. My pleasure. And I'm looking forward to having you back again real soon. And we're going to break some bread together and have some chats. I think I got a lot
okay, to good.
Do. And I want to build a good friendship with you. And maybe we can get your man and my lady. All of us should connect and, you know.
That's nice. Thank you. Yeah. I would love that.
And I think it's amazing when I meet someone in my age group that's with it and smart and full of life and energy. It's just it's a wonderful thing.
It is nice, isn't it? Yeah, that they haven't given up.
Oh, no. Amen, sister. Never give up. And consistency trumps intensity, man. That's just so good. I love that. I'm just going to be saying that all day today now. It's going to be in my head. That's great.
Okay, thank you.
And that wraps up another exciting episode of the podcast, The Thought Leader Revolution. To find out more about today's amazing guest, the one and only Deborah Bash, go to the show notes at thethoughtleaderrevolution.com and listen, take advantage of getting in touch with her. Go to Instagram, look her up. We're going to have her IG handle in there and communicate with her. This is a woman that's worth knowing, and you're going to learn a lot from interacting. Until next time, bye-bye.
This episode has been brought to you by eCircleAcademy.com, the proven system to add 6 to 7 figures a year to your thought leader practice.